In the morning, while it was still very dark, he got up and went out to a deserted place, and there he prayed. And Simon and his companions hunted for him. When they found him, they said to him, "Everyone is searching for you." And he answered, "Let us go on to the neighboring towns, so that I may proclaim the message there also, for that is what I came out to do." In the name of God, Creator, Redeemer, and Sustainer, amen. Today, we still find Jesus in the first chapter of the Gospel of Mark. He is still rushing about, as he has been for the past few weeks, from town to town, healing the sick with various diseases, including Simon's mother-in-law in bed with a fever, casting out demons, proclaiming God's message. How does he do it? How does he do it with everyone searching for him? An uncontrolled frenzy. This past Friday, Brian and I took a trip up to our home in Western Maryland. This was not a trip just to get away, but to check on the heating situation, to see if the pipes had frozen. We hadn't been there since Thanksgiving. And as some of you know from an earlier sermon, we have had a continuing problem with finding anyone at a heating and cooling company to help us determine what is wrong. The heat either doesn't run at all or runs all the time, freezing pipes or high electric bills. We've had several parts replaced to no avail. Several folks have said nothing is wrong, that it's just cycling through. In any event, I think we have finally found the right company, the right man, Mr. Albright. Mr. Albright has been doing this heating and cooling work all of his life. When he takes off, he tinkers with and flies a small airplane. That's a good sign that he likes to be a mechanic. Unlike all the other companies that we have called, when we called, Mr. Albright called right back. He came up to the house and met with Brian on the Wednesday afternoon before Thanksgiving. And on that day, here's what he said. "Well, the system's old. It will probably need to be replaced soon. But I'm going to need some more time than I have today to study it. And here's what you can do in the meantime to keep it on and the pipes from freezing. Next time you are here, I'll come for a closer look." So this past Friday was the closer look. Right on time, Mr. Albright arrived with his son, who was learning the business. He's had to let his other employees go right now, so it's just the two of them. He spent quite a long time checking everything out, and he found two leaks and a broken part that no other company or mechanic had found, just by taking his time and looking. In about 2 hours, the heating system was working fully again, although we will have to replace it sometime in the future. It will get us through this winter. As he and his son were putting their tools away in the truck, I heard him say to his son, "Well, sometimes it can take a while to figure things out. Remember, there's a lot you haven't seen. That takes time." There's a lot you haven't seen. That takes time. Wisdom for all of us. Wisdom that is essential for our frenzied days, but hard to learn to apply. In Chinese philosophy, there's a term called wu wei, or right action. It's a kind of action that is more disciplined and liberating than the frenzy that we all often live in our work and lives each day. It's the kind of action that Mr. Albright followed with our heat. It's the kind of action that Jesus followed in his ministry. This type of action is typified by the Chinese story of the woodcutter attributed to Taoist Chuang Tzu. Here is the story. King, the master carver, made a bell stand of precious wood. When it was finished, all who saw it were astounded. They said it must be the work of spirits. The prince of the kingdom said to the master carver, "What is your secret?" King replied, "I am only a workman. I have no secret. There is only this. When I began to think about the work you commanded, I guarded my spirit and did not expend it. I did not expend it on trifles that were not to the point. I fasted in order to set my heart at rest. After 3 days fasting, I had forgotten gain and success. After 5 days of fasting, I had forgotten praise or criticism. After 7 days of fasting, I had forgotten my body with all its limbs. By this time, all thought of your highness and of the court had faded away. All that might distract me from the work had vanished. I was collected in the single thought of the bell stand. Then, and only then, I went to the forest to see the trees in their own natural state. When the right tree appeared before my eyes, the bell stand had also appeared in it, clearly, beyond doubt. All I had to do was to put forth my hand and begin. If I had not met this particular tree, there would have been no bell stand at all. What happened? My own collected thought encountered the hidden potential in the wood. From this live encounter came the work which you ascribe to the spirits. Now the woodcutter had some things in common with in the way Jesus and those of us that employ the model of right action or Wu Wei operate. First, before he begins the job of cutting down and carving the tree, he centers himself for the task. He does not jump right in. He makes sure that he is fasted in such a way that he no longer thinks of gain or success, praise or criticism, even his own bodily needs. How many of us truly do that when an urgent task is presented before us? Lest you think that this is an urgent task, this is not an urgent task for the woodcarver, that he's just a creative artist with all sorts of time on his hand to get centered. Remember that he carves at the bequest of the prince. In Chinese culture, this means that the prince is unhappy with this bell stand. It most likely means the death of the woodcarver. Pretty high expectations. Life or death results. How could the woodcarver not do his job and not give in to fear? Or how could he do his job and not give in to fear? He took his time, even when his time seemed limited. He had practiced his craft day after day, and he relied on the gifts that he had. It's like the master surgeon who told her students that at one point in open heart surgery, you have only 30 seconds to tie off this artery, so you've got to take your time. You rely on your gifts for sure. And some of us stop right there. We say we aren't skilled enough in the task. Even though we are technically qualified, we could study more. When we've learned the task, we then have to learn the wisdom. The wisdom that tells us to leave behind the fear of failure, the fear of dying, in order to do the task in Wu Wei, or right action. When we can pass our fears by focusing ourselves on the task before us, we are asked to clear our mind and heart of certain external expectations in order to come to right action. We forget about the praise and criticism, the success or failure. We concentrate on the task before us. Second, the woodcarver story in Jesus' ministry shows us that we are called to think beyond effectiveness as a result. As Parker Palmer writes, in any arena of action, rearing children, counseling people, repairing machines, writing books, right action depends on yielding our image of particular outcomes to the reality right before us. Ourselves, the other, the adventure of the action itself. But this yielding requires us to confront our fears once more. Behind our obsessions with projecting results and gearing our actions towards them is our need to control the other and the situation. And behind our need to control is the fear of what will happen if we lose control. If we lack confidence that life is trustworthy, that a life of live encounters will take us towards wholeness, then we will forever feel the need to manipulate. And goal setting and the results of goal setting will be our major strategy. I've done a lot of thinking about that one. Our culture's fearful obsession with results has sometimes ironically led us to abandon great objectives and settle for trivial and mediocre ends. The reason is simple, says Palmer. As long as effectiveness is the ultimate standard by which we judge our actions, we will act only towards ends we are sure we can achieve. People who undertake projects of real breadth or depth are very unlikely to be effective, since effectiveness is measured by short-term results. When Palmer thinks of the great works we are called to in our lives, works we avoid at our peril of our souls, he thinks of works in which we cannot possibly be effective. He means such things as loving other people, opposing injustice, comforting the grieving, bringing an end to war, perhaps saving our economy. There can be no effectiveness in these tasks, only the commitment to work away at them. If we judge such work by the standard of measurable outcomes, the only possible result will be defeat and despair. Palmer tells the story of a friend who spent years at the Catholic Worker, a ministry to the poor in New York City. She spends her days trying to respond to the ceaseless wave of human misery before her. One day, Palmer asked her how she could keep doing a work that never showed any results, a work in which the problems kept seeming to get worse instead of better. And here's what she said. "The thing you don't understand, Parker, is that just because something is impossible doesn't mean you shouldn't do it. Remember, Mary, nothing is impossible with God. Let's try to see what's going on with this heating system. Let us go on to neighboring towns so that we may proclaim the message there also, for that is what I came out to do." Amen.